Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Hey, Bob, take it easy there. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm Doug McBurney. So glad to be back with you after a couple of weeks of travel across the great southwest of these United States. What a lovely week it had been. 2 weeks, I guess, actually. Let's see, where did I go? I went to Las Vegas. It's still about the same. A little bit more disgusting, a little bit more pornographied, but it's about the same. Then down to Lake Havasu City. What a drive. I recommend that to anyone who appreciates rocks, geological formations. You want to make that drive. Going to Moab in a few weeks, down through Moab. That ought to be pretty neat. Then over to Albuquerque and back. Anyway, it's just been crazy. Sorry I wasn't with you last week, but I can see that you've survived. And I'm glad you have. Well done. I got home and I realized that I had left my phone charger at somewhere along the way. And I knew it had to be at the motel there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And my extremely attractive audio engineer, she said, well, why don't you call the hotel? And, you know, maybe they've got it. Maybe they'll mail it to you. So I called the hotel, spoke with the lady at the front desk. I said, you know, I stayed there last night, and I left, I left my phone charger for my BlackBerry. It's a Motorola phone charger, you know, a little black brick, you know, micro USB. Maybe you guys saw it. She said, well, let me put you through to housekeeping. So I get put through to housekeeping, and she answers the phone. Hello? I said, yes, I believe I left a Motorola phone charger for my BlackBerry. It's a sort of a black box. It's a micro USB, kind of a standard thing, but I'm hoping maybe you found it in my room, number 1407. And she said, ¿Por qué? ¿Por qué? I said, do you speak English? She said, no. So I said, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and all your efforts. And so there I'm without, what's that? Well, there wasn't much effort on her part, at least not to learn the native tongue and to be of service to her fellow citizen, but hey, that's the cost of doing business, like the speeding ticket I got somewhere in Utah. That Utah police officer was awfully happy because I had my radar detector prominently displayed, but he was strategically placed in a rock outcropping just over a hill, and there was just no way that I could slow down. And he kind of smiled when he walked up the car. He said, how loud was that when I got you? I said, well, it was pretty loud. Officer, why don't you go ahead and write me up and go on about your business. I appreciate your efforts to keep the country safe. Anyway, but I'm back, and this is the show. Here we are. I want to start out in the domestic tranquility file from Stamford, Connecticut. This is a story that comes to us from the Stanford Advocate. Newspaper there. Gerard Landon is a native of the Virgin Islands, and he was recently charged with criminal attempt at first degree sexual assault, first degree unlawful restraint, and second degree strangulation. Landon is being held on $500,000 bond and is expected to be arraigned in court on Monday. Now, according to police, a woman was approached by Landon as she was exiting the Basilica of St. John the Evangelist. That's right. She was walking home from church. Now, Landon allegedly asked the woman for a hug. Yeah. Now, when the woman refused, Landon grabbed her, and while she screamed for help, he wrestled her to the ground in some bushes, and while he was trying to assault her, Landon kissed the woman. He kissed her, I said, and he forced his tongue into her mouth. Ew. Now, the woman bit down on his tongue, biting his tongue off, or at least a goodly portion of his tongue. And the man immediately stopped the attack and ran away. Police report that it was a substantial piece of his tongue that was bitten off, about an inch long. Police recovered the readily identifiable piece of tongue at the scene of the attack. And it'll no doubt be submitted for evidence. And Mr. Gerard Landon, native of the Virgin Islands, will be spending some time, obviously, apparently, in a Stamford, Connecticut jail, but not long enough. He should be put to death for this, in addition to the whole tongue situation, which is unpleasant, and he deserved that. But anyone who kidnaps someone, holds them against their will, especially while trying to sexually assault them, well, they should be put to death. And, of course, all people of goodwill and common sense know and understand that. And if you don't know and understand that, well, you're confused. And you're wrong. And you're lucky to have found this show. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. All right. Now, speaking of people who need to be enlightened, my goodness, there are many. As we go to the culture file, we find that there's been results are in. From the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And the results have revealed that U.S. school children have made little progress since 2006 in their understanding of key historical themes, including America's role in the world. Only 20% of U.S. fourth graders and just 17% of eighth graders who took the 2010 history exam were deemed proficient or advanced. And that's unchanged since the test was last administered in 2006. This is a story from the Wall Street Journal, by the way. And the author of the story, the reporter, he says that the test was last administered in 2006. Proficient means students have a solid understanding of the material. So, folks, it's worse than we think. Obviously, this is not good. Only 12% of 12th graders were proficient in history. But what's really embarrassing is that the reporter for the Wall Street Journal has to stick a definition of proficient in the article because he knows that his readers are a product of the government schools and he knows that they probably don't understand what the word proficient means. So he has to stick an explanation in the middle of the article, and that's just embarrassing. Let's see, what do we have next here? We've got the Justice File. This is a story that the headline might have struck people as funny because it says that a clown shot a teenager. But listen to this from the Chicago Tribune. An off-duty Chicago police officer dressed up as a clown for a Southside fundraiser shot and killed a teenager who held him at gunpoint. Yeah, he was at a fundraising event. After the event ended, the officer went to his car and a teen approached him asking him for money. And you know what that means when you're in the south side of Chicago. Someone approaches you and asks you for money, that means you're about to get robbed. And you better be on your toes. And this officer was indeed. When the officer said he had no money, the teenager pulled a gun. During a struggle with the teen, the officer grabbed hold of the gun, opened fire, and killed him. Justice done. Case closed. Nice work. A weapon was recovered from the scene. And there won't be a trial. There'll be a hearing into whether or not the police officer did the right thing and all of that. But, there you have it. There's Chicago, at least the south side. As the summer months begin to bake and heat things up around the country, you can anticipate many, many more stories from the Domestic Tranquility File and the Justice File, as for some reason people seem to go insane during the summer. Now, speaking of justice, I just want to address one brief issue regarding the Kaylee Anthony case. Now, I know, some people consider it embarrassing to mention the fact that they're watching this case at all, but the bottom line is 95% of us are watching it to one degree or another, okay? So it's okay. Just between you and me, we can admit it, okay? And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, this case is... It's a microcosm of the justice system in general. Here we have a woman who's just so guilty and has lied so many times to investigators and people in the court
that it's just obvious that she's guilty of participating in a capital crime, covering up a capital crime, all of which should be capital offenses. But the one thing that has struck me about this case is that no one knows who Kaylee Anthony's dad is. I know there's been some paternity tests on various people involved. I think her father, even her brother, and a few of the guys that the mother shacked up with in the hours and days and weeks before her pregnancy with little Kaylee. But no one knows who this child's father is. And that just, I mean, to me, it just screams out that in a society that doesn't value fathers, and in a family where the children don't know their father, that the propensity for violence and a bad end knows no limit. And certainly this is an example of it. Now, speaking of paternity, should I even mention this? Maybe I shouldn't even mention this because the Anthony Viner story is pretty much done. And we haven't mentioned it. I prefer Viner, which is the traditional German pronunciation of the former congressman from New York, his name. I prefer Anthony Viner to the popularized Anthony Weiner. But it came out that Anthony Viner's wife is pregnant. Yeah, and her name is Uma. And she works very closely with Hillary Rodham Clinton and apparently travels with her everywhere she goes. So there's one thing we know about Uma's baby, is that Bill Clinton is not the father of Uma Viner's baby. Because there's one thing you're not going to find within a mile and a half of Hillary Clinton, and that's Bill Clinton. So we can put those rumors to rest right now, okay? Bill Clinton is not involved. All right. As suspicious as he might be in a case like this. All right. Now, let's move on. We're going to go into the culture file. As the culture degenerates further, as Christians are shoved into the closet and deviants and perverts parade out of the closet in public in front of God and everybody with pride. Last weekend was Pride Fest week. And it may have bled and just oozed into this week as well. With all the goings-on in New York that we'll get to later. But let's start in the culture file with something a lot less disgusting than what happened in New York, which we will get to. But I want to start in Houston, Texas. There is a, well, I guess you could call it a tradition at this point. It's called sagging. Are you familiar with sagging, dear? No? No, that's not what's happening to our faces. No. Although that is a tradition that goes way back. I was actually, my four-year-old daughter asked me that. Just this morning, we're getting ready for church. And she says, Daddy, why do people get old and die? And I mean, I got like 5 minutes to get ready and get in the car. This is not the time for a conversation of this depth. But I said, Zoe, the thing is God made people to live forever, but he knew that if they rebelled against him, that they couldn't live forever because they'd become evil and even more evil. They'd become eternally bad. So he built in mechanisms within the system so that if people ever rebelled against him, these mechanisms would break down and people and even plants, animals, the universe, everything was broken and it would die. And God built that in. And she gave me a look. I don't think she understood five words out of what I said, but I've laid the foundation. She's only four. We'll get back to this topic. I said, get in the car. Anyway, but that's not what sagging is. Okay. Sagging is the popular style of wearing pants where the bottoms are worn way below the waist. Now are you familiar?
Very much.
Now she's familiar. But sagging, according to ABC News in Houston, sagging is no longer allowed at Greens Point Mall in Houston. That's right. They've changed the code of conduct there at the mall. A Greens Point spokeswoman told reporters, she says that the fashion trend was causing such an issue that security kept asking management to do something about it. And so they've banned the baggy pants at the Greens Point Mall there in Houston. And I just want to posit my theory behind the whole baggy pants thing. I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the show, but I have a theory that the whole sagging pants thing, it's all about one thing: shoplifting. That's what it's all about. That's what it's always been about. And I think that if you were able to penetrate and put a mole inside some of these gangs of youth, scumbag, deviant perverts who wear their pants down around their, I don't know what you would call it. They wear the saggy pants. You know what I'm talking about. If you were to get a mole in there and you could actually find out what's going on, it's all about shoplifting. And it's about time somebody did something about it. I guess that's not that earth-shattering, but that's my theory on why they wear their pants that way. If you have a competing theory, I'd be happy to entertain that. And one more on saggy pants before we move on. This is from Reuters. A U.S. college football player who allegedly refused a request to hoist his saggy pants when he boarded a flight was arrested after a dispute with the crew. Deshaun Marmon, a 20-year-old college football player, was arrested for trespassing by police at the request of the plane's captain. Yeah. A spokesperson for the district attorney, a deputy district attorney, says, quote, "The attention was brought to him because his pants were so low that his genitals were almost showing. Oh. And they asked him to leave the plane." Now, he wouldn't leave the plane. He decided to start a ruckus. And so what did the supine law enforcement officials do when he refused to leave the plane? They made everyone else get off the plane. And then they went through the fracas and the ruckus with this fella, and they eventually arrested him. And my bet is that they found several of those little one-ounce bottles of vodka right there in his baggy pants. Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. So glad to be back, and so glad to expose the giant conspiracy with the whole saggy pants thing. Yeah, I got it pegged, but as I said, I'm open to varying opinions. I'm in a debate right now with several conservative friends of mine as to the viability of Mitt Romney's candidacy. Yes, I have a number of friends who have worked tirelessly over the past 4 years to completely discredit Mitt Romney's conservative credentials. And they've done a fine job. And I had to send out an email last week and say, okay, fellas, I really appreciate what you've done, but there's no way Mitt Romney's going to win a single primary in the Republican race. It's not going to happen. He no longer has any credibility amongst the Christian fundamentalists, the Tea Party types, the physical conservatives, the fiscal conservatives. He just doesn't have any credibility, and the only reason he shows up in the polls is because he still has a fundraising machine, and all those fundraising people are looking to get paid for the next, 6 or 8 months or however long this ride lasts for Mitt this time. But they're hoping to sock away a lot of cash before it all implodes. And so that's why he shows up in the polls, but he has no credibility. Please, gentlemen, can we move on to addressing viable candidates? And I'm open to competing views on that, but I want to congratulate Steve Dace, Greg Jackson, Bob Enyart, American Right to Life, a number of other groups who have just utterly exposed the truth about Mitt Romney. And hopefully by the end of the summer, all of those fine organizations and fine individuals will be able to move on to credible, viable candidates, because by the end of the summer, I think it'll be obvious to everyone. Mitt will probably have disappeared to a Caribbean island with a big bag of money, and all of his campaign workers and fundraisers will take their big bags of money and go wherever they go. go work for Rick Perry or whatever happens. I don't know. But Romney's gone, and I sure do appreciate all the hard work that was done by the folks I mentioned and at least 100 others, researchers, people who put their heart and soul into exposing the truth about Mitt Romney and the fact that he's not a conservative. I sure do appreciate your efforts. And I've said that if he wins one primary, that I'll eat, it was Bob Enyart's producer. I said I'd eat his hat. Now, I know he doesn't wear a hat, so that was pretty easy to say. But I'll state it right now that if Mitt Romney wins a single Republican primary, I'll buy every one of those people a cup of coffee. So I can handle that. He could win one, but I doubt it. If he wins one, I'll buy him a cup of coffee. If he wins none, I'll buy everyone a steak dinner. How about that? And that's if I'm right. All right, but let's move on to more viable stories. I've got a story here from the Statesman asking about snow globes. The headline was about snow globes, and I don't know why this piqued my interest, but here's the deal on snow globes, ladies and gentlemen. Because snow globes are filled with liquid, according to this article, you can't carry a snow globe onto an airplane. So, rows and rows of snow globes sit at the surplus store at an airport, which gets its the surplus store gets its inventory from state surplus, but also from items that were left behind or confiscated at Dallas-Fort Worth Airport and Texas airports all across the great state of Texas. So in the 5 years the store has been open, its plane-related inventory has soared because of heightened security, heightened stupidity. In 2010, the state's general fund was enriched by $300,000 from sales from this government surplus store. Most of this stuff was confiscated from poor hapless travelers. You got the snow globe from grandma. Throw it in the basket, son, unless you want to go back and check it. Isn't that amazing when they tell you that? You're at the gate. Your plane's leaving in 27 minutes. And you just spent half an hour in line. And they say, well, you could go check it. And you look at them and you say, well, no, I can't go check it. And you know I can't go check it. So I'll throw it in the... great. Just thank you very much. I feel so much safer now that Grandma's snow globe is in the big bucket. And I didn't know what happened to that stuff. But the government's selling it off, and they made $300,000 at this store in Texas. The article says, in its own small way, the stuff travelers leave behind is helping the state ease its financial woes. Just, folks, and here's what alarms me about this, is that something like this just builds up the idea in the minds of these socialist progressive politicians that, hey, I mean, we put these ridiculous restrictions on these hapless travelers, we're bringing in $300,000. If we just enslave the entire population and confiscate all their stuff, we could sell it off and we get rid of the deficit, get rid of the debt. Anyway, it just scares me because, you know, politicians aren't the brightest people on the planet. But they do pay attention to what works when it comes to using force to restrict the liberty of fine Americans and to squeeze money out of them in an unjust fashion. They do pay attention to that. Very astute on that level. Now let's move to the personhood file. Big story this past week on the huffing and puffing on past, which is probably in its death throes. This could be one of the final articles that's quoted from the huffing and puffing on past. And according to this article, the huffing and puffing on past has previously reported more than 900 bills concerning reproductive health were brought forward before the end of March 2011. By contrast, according to NARAL, the abortion proponents, top lobbyists for the abortion industry, according to NARAL, only 175 anti-choice bills were moving through the state at the same time a year ago. So now we've got more than 900. A year ago, we only had 175 so-called anti-choice bills, pro-life bills, anti-abortion bills, bills to limit, restrict, or end the killing of innocent people, we could say. Elizabeth Nash, a policy expert for the Guttmacher Institute, a major institute there in the abortion industry, Elizabeth says, quote, "We're getting hammered on so many fronts. Every day is another nail in the coffin for Roe versus Wade." According to the Huffing and Puffing on Past, Republicans have tried to tie the abortion and family planning discussion to money matters, arguing that taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. But the Hyde Amendment, according to the Huffington Post, the Hyde Amendment, which was adopted nearly 40 years ago, already blocks all federal funding from being used for abortions. Except, now that's a really big except. It's an except that you could drive an abortionist Mercedes-Benz through. Except in the cases of incest or rape. So the Hyde Amendment funds abortion for certain children whose parents or whose fathers were criminals. So because the child's father was a criminal, the Hyde Amendment enables Medicare to publicly fund abortions in those cases. So for those of you who think that there is no public funding of abortion, it's a fallacy and you're living in a fantasy world. Your tax dollars go to killing children every single day. And in fact, states who are trying to pass legislation to ban abortion, I just did a story, I forget what state it was. It was Alabama or Georgia, I think, where they had a bill to ban abortion, and a Republican read the bill, and he said, well, wait a minute. This will ban abortion in the cases of rape and incest. That'll cost us $4 billion in Medicare funding. So the bill was killed by the Republicans. There, I believe, in the state of Georgia. I did that story. If you want that whole story, go to kgov.com, where I guest hosted Bob Enyart's radio broadcast here in Denver, I believe, this past Thursday, and you can get the whole story. But keep in mind, during that show, I had a toothache, and I still have a toothache. I'm nursing a toothache, which makes it very difficult to, number one, eat solid food, and number two, be in a good mood. It's restricted my ability to do both of those. So it was not my best show, but I did do that story. And I just wanted to make the point that the Hyde Amendment funds abortion. So it's all a big lie. But one thing we can be sure of is that the personhood movement has lit a fire under pro-life politicians, and that fire is catching hold. According to the Huffing and Puffing on Past, the pro-life movement has gone beyond just, this is not according to the Huffing and Puffing on Past, I apologize. This is according to Cal Zastro, co-founder of Personhood USA. He told the Puffing on Past in an interview, he said the pro-life movement has gone beyond just hoping that we can save a few babies, hoping that maybe if we pass a regulation or restriction that we can save a few babies. Cal Zastro said, one of our primary goals is not to overturn Roe versus Wade. It's to get states to ignore Roe versus Wade and do what's right, which is protect all children, protect all innocent people, and stop legalized child killing. Cal, that's just downright inspirational. Where can I send a check? Can somebody let me know, how do I get a hold of Cal Zastro, and how do I send him some money? I'm going to go to Personhood USA. He's the co-founder, and I'm going to make a donation this month. And I would encourage you to do the same, because if we had more people with this kind of gumption, we might just be able to end child killing before we're all old and gray and possibly dead. Now, back to the Huffing and Puffing on Past. Mississippi will allow voters on the next general election ballot to decide whether to add an amendment to their state's constitution defining the term person at the moment of biological development, the moment of conception, they say here in the article, but that's another story. I don't want to get into all that. The American Civil Liberties Union and Planned Parenthood are preparing to challenge these laws in court. What does Cal Zastro have to say? Is he afraid? Is he hiding behind the skirts of a lawyer? No, he says, Cal Zastro says, we say bring it on. We're the ones picking the fight. Love that. He says, we're the ones picking the fight. We are prepared for the court fights, including all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Bring it on, says Cal Zastro, co-founder of Personhood USA. I would encourage you to go there and make a donation because fighting all these battles, I'm sure it's costing them a lot of money, as well as their personal lives are just completely, non-existent. But they will exist in the next life. And that's one thing, you know, a fellow like Cal Zastro, he says bring it on because he knows that this isn't it. He knows that he's just preparing for eternity. And I have a feeling Cal's going to do all right. He's going to do all right. All right. Now let's move on. That was some encouraging news on the personhood front. We've got the liberals actually concerned, which conservatives very rarely are able to do. So I want to congratulate Personhood USA for that, if nothing more. And I want to congratulate them for a lot more. As we go forward, I'm sure there will be lots of congratulations going out to Personhood USA as the years roll on. All right, now let's go jump back into our domestic tranquility file. This is from Columbia, South Carolina. All eight suspects are in custody after a brutal attack in Five Points, Columbia, last Monday morning. The 18-year-old victim, identified as Carter Strange, was jogging through the parking through a parking lot just after midnight when the assault happened. He was beaten almost to death by a group of approximately eight individuals. Authorities have charged these individuals with lynching. Lynching? Yeah. The South Carolina Code of Laws defines lynching as an attack on one person by two or more people. And they've indeed charged these thugs in Columbia with lynching. Wow. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that story because, well, it's a good example of where we are. If you want to go jogging at midnight, which in a civilized country you should be able to do. And the fact that these people are being charged with lynching, well, it's remarkable. Let's just leave it at that. All right. Now, where are we on time? I have no idea because I blew the time earlier. But we're probably due for a break. Let's do these. Let me do these two justice stories.
Okay, go ahead.
And then you'll be ready. Okay? Teenage flash mobs. We've all heard about this. Well, here we go, folks. From Fox News. They say the same technologies that for years have brought together the mostly benign and goofy flash mobs in which groups suddenly break into dance at a mall or stumble around like zombies at train stations is being used now to plan and execute bold robberies. They're called flash robs. Yeah, they're being organized by young teenagers through various social media. And because of these flash plots, police have begun to more closely monitor social media sites. A recent survey done by a leading retail industry group shows that social media technology has led to a spike in organized crime, mostly as thieves find it easier to sell stolen goods online. So they're organizing these flash robs via Facebook, and then they're selling their wares, all the stuff they ripped off through social media. And I can tell you, folks, that as these flash robs gain in notoriety, they'll occur more and more often because it's the type of thing that feeds on itself with teenagers. There was two new ones up on Drudge today. I didn't have time to pull them down because I've already got more than enough material. But we've got this one from Chicago from CBS the end of last week. Some 50 young people barged into a Walgreens at Mission in Chicago on the Magnificent Mile last Tuesday afternoon. They took bottled drinks and sandwiches off the shelf and then they ran off. Now, police report that authorities were able to nab three of the thieves. So they've got three of these flash robbers, and I just want to say to the justice officials there in Chicago, this is your chance to end flash robs right now. This is your chance. You should take these boys, once they're tried and convicted, you take them right there on the Magnificent Mile in front of the mall there, right by the lake, and you make them drop their saggy pants, and you cane all the flesh off their backside, and flash robs will drop like a rock. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you aboard. Let's move on now to the culture file as we escape the flash mob, the flash rob. We jump to this story from Richmond, Virginia, from Breitbart. The Food and Drug Administration last Tuesday released 9 new graphic health warning labels for U.S. cigarette packs. Yeah, the new labels will take up half of the pack of cigarettes, and apparently they're talking about pictures of cancerous lungs and emphysema-ridden lungs and dead people and bodies everywhere. And they're going to, and you know, folks, to be honest with you, I don't have a problem with this as an idea. Now, I do have a problem with the government doing it. I don't think the government should mandate that cigarette manufacturers have to put pictures of dead people on their packs. But let's face it, folks, smoking is known to lead to sickness, illness, and death, okay? It's a fact of life. I would support a nonprofit type, maybe people who've lost loved ones to lung cancer and emphysema, if they wanted to get together and start putting up billboards with diseased lungs and dead people, I think that's fine. I think in the case of public health, at least it's a good idea to show people the truth, especially young people, about what smoking cigarettes will do to your body, or could do, I should say, to your body. They should be aware of the truth. But again, yeah, I think it should be private, not-for-profit, anti-smoking type groups. I don't think it should be a government mandate, but I'm not against this idea in general because these images tell the truth. I mean, it's not a lie. So why won't the media and the culture embrace the publication of images showing the truth about unborn children? Now, and I'm not even necessarily talking about the gruesome, horrible pictures of aborted babies. If you haven't seen them, you really should, because it's the truth about what it is. But what I've noticed over the last 20 years is that the news media reflexively resists showing even pictures of babies in utero, of fetuses, of embryos. They reflexively gag at the idea of showing the truth that a baby in the womb is a person. If governing officials are going to support this idea of showing diseased lungs and dead people on cigarette packs, I would hope that they wouldn't be hypocritical and they would start showing the truth about what a baby in the womb is prior to birth and even after abortion. I think the truth should be shown. I'm all for that. So there you have that. All right, now, deeper into the culture file. All right, I'll do one story on the deviants, and then I gotta move to something else. But, you know, the homos and the deviants and freaks and the perverts are pouring out of the closet at a record pace, and we have to report on it. Last week, according to WKYT-TV, in the city of Hazard, which I believe is Virginia, it could be Massachusetts. Last week, dozens of people protested the actions of a city employee who allegedly removed 2 gay men. And that doesn't mean happy men. That means 2 homosexual deviant perverts. Remove these 2 gay men with disabilities. They're not just gay. They're gay with disabilities, which makes them, I mean, practically superhuman. They should almost be worshipped. Because not only are they homosexual, but they have disabilities. Well, they were removed from a facility run by the city of Hazard. The men were repeatedly hugging and kissing. I'm sorry for that, folks, but the facts are the facts. I hate to do that to you, but they were repeatedly hugging and kissing, and facility officials say that this is inappropriate whether you're hetero or homo. They have certain standards. You can't be slobbering all over each other in the pool. Get a room, for crying out loud. Okay. Well, not in the case of these 2 guys. You're right. That would be... That's okay. Pretty disgusting. But anyway, they were kicked out of the pool for slobbering all over each other in the pool in front of everybody. Oh, I see. This is in Kentucky. I apologize to the great state of Virginia. And Massachusetts, well, you know, you get what you get because you're so overrun with deviants that we always assume that these stories are coming out of Massachusetts. Thanks, Mitt Romney. However, the Kentucky Equality Federation says that the men were only sitting on each other's laps. And that these two disabled gay men were obviously discriminated against. We were just sitting on each other's laps. Is there something wrong with that? Well, you're making me want to throw up, and you're making everyone around you want to throw up. So, yeah, there's something wrong with that. Please get out of the pool. You're disgusting. Anyway, they were kicked out of the pool. The city worker who kicked them out of the pool allegedly used the Bible to justify kicking these two fags out of the pool. Now, I put the word allegedly in there because the newspaper, they just report that obviously this guy must have used the Bible. You see, because deep down all these leftist, liberal, socialist media types, they all know deep down that the real reason there's something wrong with homosexuality is because of the Bible. They know it. And deep down, they really know that the Bible's true. And they spend all their waking hours trying to discredit the Bible and discredit the people who believe that the Word of God is relevant to us in government and in our daily social lives. They just hate that. So they didn't allege. They immediately assumed he did use the Bible. I'm going to say allegedly because I don't know all the story. I don't know all the facts here. I wasn't there. You know, I wasn't, fighting back my gag reflex sitting by the pool watching these two guys. So I'm going to say he allegedly used the Bible to justify kicking the men out of the pool. The Hazard City Attorney, that's Hazard, Kentucky, according to WKYT, the Hazard City Attorney says it was inappropriate for the worker to argue with a patron and to use religious beliefs as grounds to kick the couple out of the pool. So here's the takeaway on this story, ladies and gentlemen. If you are a government employee, if you have not had to already, you will soon be forced to choose between doing what's right and honoring God and your paycheck from your government employer. As this city worker in Hazard, Kentucky is about to find out, you've got a choice to make. You can work for the government, or you can be true to your religious convictions, true to God, and true to honoring the gospel of Jesus Christ. The two have become mutually exclusive. And if you have not already, and folks, if you work for the government, I got no beef with you. I understand. We have all got to make a living. I just want you to be aware that the day is coming, if it has not already come, that you will have to choose between doing what's right and doing what you have to do to get your paycheck. And I hope you do the right thing. And the right thing would be not to collect your next paycheck. And that's just not my opinion. That's right and wrong. That's black and white. And I'm right. All right. Now, I can't do another story on the fags. I'm sorry. I shouldn't use that kind of coarse language. I don't know why you do that. I don't want to do any more story on the deviant perverts. I'm going to push them to the back of the pile. We're going to move into the war file. This is an entertaining story, and I needed something like this. From the Daily Mail in London, treasure hunter Bill Warren from California is reportedly launching an underwater search to find the body of former Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. That's entertainment. Yeah. Now, U.S. forces say they buried Osama at sea from the USS Carl Vinson in the North Arabian Sea. So this explorer who has found, he began diving commercially back in the early 70s. He's ran several salvage companies. And the first shipwreck he ever found was an English merchant boat that sank near Santa Cruz, California. So this is a legitimate guy. Right? He says he's going to try and find Osama's body. The explorer launched the hunt because he does not believe President Obama gave enough proof of the terrorist's death. Yeah. Right. So I'm on board with this guy. I'll send this guy a donation, too. Actually, he probably doesn't need a donation. He's a for-profit type thing. What do you think the body of Osama bin Laden's worth? I think he'd do pretty well at auction. He's using high-tech equipment and several boats in the search, which he says will cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. He says, "We do this because we're patriotic Americans, and we feel that President Obama failed to provide the proof." Yeah. And I'm in agreement there. I wanted to see his head. Mm-hmm. At ground zero, frankly, but maybe that's a bit barbaric. But anyway, if this guy cannot find the body of Osama bin Laden, I'm telling you that the body's not there. If the body's there, I think this fellow will find it, if it's there. I've been cogitating many theories about why it is Barry Ho came up with this I killed Osama bin Laden scenario. And if he could have faked it, you know. And I know it's like put on the tinfoil hat, Doug, and all that. But I have my suspicions. And I think that Barry Ho and the media are so much in lockstep now that they're actually working together and are probably capable of pulling off any level of deception, any level, no matter how gross. I mean, CNN is practically an arm of the administration. And we may have said that in the past about Bill Clinton when we go back. We always said, you know, the media is in bed with Bill Clinton. I didn't mean literally, but although that may have been the case. But this is different. I mean, CNN is a propaganda arm directly controlled, manipulated, fed by the Barry Ho administration. And they're capable of anything, ladies and gentlemen. So watch your back and keep your powder dry, figuratively speaking. Okay, let's move into the politics file. From Astana, Kazakhstan, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has called for a security alliance of several former Soviet nations and China to form a united front against what is left of the West. So there you have it, folks. Ahmadinejad is calling for a new axis. He made his comments in an address to fellow heads of state at the summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization there in Kazakhstan. Much of Ahmadinejad's fiery speech was devoted to leveling an exhaustive series of thinly veiled accusations against unnamed Western countries, which he described as enslavers, colonialists, and invaders. I think he lifted that right out of Obama's book. By golly. This Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it was formed in Shanghai in 2001 by China, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Russia, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan. Did I forget any stands? Oh, they're all here. In recent years, it's attracted interest in full membership from countries like Iran, India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. Isn't it weird that when we were growing up, we all heard stories of how the world aligned in the 1930s and basically devolved into a point where world war was inevitable because you had the aggressive motives of both the Russians and the Germans. And it's bizarre that things could happen. I mean, things that we're not old enough to have forgotten yet seem to be happening again. It's just, it's very disturbing. Although maybe the young people just haven't been taught it. And I'd be honest with you, I didn't learn any of it in school. I learned most of it from my dad when he yelled at the news. He would yell at Walter Cronkite and call him a communist. And I'd be like, well, why are you saying that, Dad? For the next hour and a half, my dad would give me a lecture on World War I, World War II, the Russo-Japanese War, the Civil War. You pick a war. So anyway, maybe I was fortunate, and the kids, even just a few years behind me in school, didn't get any of this stuff, for crying out loud. Quite possible. Maybe that's why history is repeating itself so quickly. All right, let's move to the war file. A girl of nine, according to The Independent out of Great Britain, a girl of nine has told how she escaped Pakistani terrorists who tried to use her as a human bomb. Sohana Jawed said she was kidnapped on her way to school in Peshawar, Pakistan, and forced to wear a remotely controlled suicide jacket. But she escaped her captors as they prepared to send her toward a paramilitary checkpoint. Militants, according to the article, militants in Pakistan have often used young boys to carry out attacks, but the use of young girls is rare, but apparently it's increasing. So here in America, our young children are neglected, and I'll get to a couple stories here in the last segment that talk about that. And over there in the Muslim world, well, they're using their children. They're just using them to very, very evil effect. We'll be right back.
I always have to let that bass line run through one whole time. It's one of the greatest bass lines in rock and roll. It gets so low. So low that your shoes vibrate. It's really good stuff. Huh? All right. We're rounding third. We're headed for home. We're in the war file. And we're coming up to the end here. I got a couple of polls that were released this week from this past week, I should say, from the Middle East. There was a poll in Egypt asking if people prefer Osama bin Laden to Barack Obama. The American president's standing has never been worse in Egypt, even though he's encouraged the uprising and all that he's done to play kissy face with the Muslim radicals. It's plummeted since 2008. This is according to foreignpolicy.com. He's gone from 25% favorability to 12%. That's Barry Ho. Osama bin Laden, on the other hand, is more popular in Egypt this year with a 21% favorability ranking, which is pretty impressive considering the fact that he's dead. He's more popular in Egypt than is the United States president, who loves Muslims. Now, who can explain that? The poll was commissioned by the International Peace Institute, a New York-based think tank with close ties to the United Nations, Arab governments, and other deviant scum all over the planet. But even so, they can't hide the truth. So that's the first poll. Barry Ho goes to Egypt, makes his speech, kissy face with the Muslims. They hate his guts. They would chop his head off in Tahrir Square if given half a chance. And they would elect Osama bin Laden as their emperor, if given half a chance. In another poll, Pakistanis told pollsters they disapproved of the U.S. military operation that killed Osama bin Laden. That's right. Nearly two-thirds of Egyptians said they disapproved of the raid, and only 10% of Pakistanis said they approved of it. So you can play kissy face with the Muslims. You can blow their heads off. You can raid their compounds and knock their wives over and blow them away. And either way, they hate our guts. So it's a clash of civilizations. I know it might sound cliche, but that's what it is, folks. They're going to hate us no matter what. I mean, we better get the job done in at least containing the Muslim threat. I say keep it in Europe. I don't even want them in Canada, for crying out loud. And there's no love lost between me and the Canadians. Actually, I think the Canadians are all right. A little too socialist and a little too secular for my taste. But, you know, I think we could, maybe it'll just be us and the Canadians. And maybe the Mexicans, too. We'll have to create a Western Hemisphere free of the Muslim threat. We better get after it. Okay, now, back to the politics file. And great, we're back to the deviants. New York State Senator Greg Ball said that he was not sure how to vote on legislation allowing homosexuals to marry one another in public in front of God and everyone at whatever United Methodist Church they choose to carry out their festivities. So he asked people on Twitter, he actually tweeted to ask people how he should vote. So this is a Republican New York State Senator. He tweeted, "So if you were me, how would you vote on gay marriage? Yes or no?" The Republican tweeted. He just didn't know what to do. In a news video on his website, he said, "As a legislator, you have to stand somewhere in the middle." That's what he actually said. Well, as a legislator, you have to stand somewhere in the middle, unless you're going to try to pander to one side or the other, and just try to listen to both sides with respect and dignity. I mean, how can you listen to the side that's advocating open sodomy, men sodomizing each other? How can you listen to them with respect and dignity? Men destroying one another physically, spiritually, emotionally, destroying the fabric of the culture. Do we have to listen to that with respect and dignity? Can't we just listen to the side that's for life and good and truth and justice in the American way and not listen to the deviant perverts who want to bring everything down and destroy it all? Do we have to be fair and balanced with evil people? Well, that's what this senator thought. And I don't know how Ball voted, but it passed.
Homosexual marriage has been passed in New York. Dateline Albany from the Associated Press. New York became the sixth and largest state in the country to legalize homosexual marriage. Pending any court challenges, legal homosexual marriages can begin in New York by late July. After Governor Cuomo signed his bill into law just before midnight on Friday. Have you ever noticed that the most deadly, destructive, evil, and wicked bills are passed around midnight, in the middle of the night? Cuomo just couldn't wait. He couldn't. Maybe he had a date with another guy. Who's he allegedly going out with?
Sandra Lee.
Sandra Lee from the Cooking Channel? Was she ever a man? It's possible, huh? Anyway, I don't know if Cuomo was trying to maybe pick up a guy. So he was in a hurry to get this bill signed to prove his bona fides to the homosexuals. The next morning, he's out marching in the gay pride parade that bled from last week into this. I guess it's probably gay pride month in New York now. Here's the takeaway from this story, and it's buried in the middle of the story, but you got to pay attention. Earlier that same night, the Assembly in New York passed amendments protecting religious groups that oppose gay marriage from discrimination lawsuits. Did you catch that? New York Republicans fought hard for these protections for religious organizations so that they'd be protected. So what that is, folks, that's like pinning the yellow Star of David onto a Jew in Poland in 1939. That's what that's. That's what's just been done in New York. The yellow Star of David has been pinned to the lapels of all the conservative groups that are against the sodomization of our country. And now it's just a matter of time. We've been divided. The sheep and the goats have been divided. And now the wolves are going to come in. They're going to go for the sheep. So these protections that these Republicans fought for are the beginning of the persecution of the Christians by the secularists and the homosexuals. Because Christianity and homosexuality are mutually exclusive. Accepted, legalized, open homosexuality cannot coexist with open, legal Christianity. Cannot happen. The homos will kill the Christians. They've done it before. So wear your yellow Star of David. All you conservatives there in New York, you've been marked for execution. And I say that figuratively now, but it's just a matter of time before it becomes literal. These homosexuals have no conscience and they're evil like animals. These deviants who advocate the public legalization and the forced acceptance of homosexuality are like mad dog animals. They will kill us. So keep your powder dry. Let's see. We got a couple of quotes from Republicans. How much time do we have? We have very little time. Senator Steven Saland, a 67-year-old Republican, he ought to know better. He explained how his strong. He voted yes on sodomite marriage in New York. He voted. This is like your grandfather, okay? Voting yes, it's just unbelievable to me. On Friday night, gay marriage supporters wept in the Senate gallery as Senator Saland explained how his strong, traditionally family upbringing, traditional upbringing led him to embrace legalizing homosexual marriage. That's a Republican in New York. His strong family tradition. If you have a homosexual family tradition, you don't have a family tradition because you don't have a family. Because if everyone turns queer, we all die. How could this Republican... all right, I'm going to leave that aside. I'm starting to get upset. He said, while I understand that my vote will disappoint many, I'm doing the right thing in voting to support marriage equality. So there it is again, the... Orwellian use of the language. It's not gay marriage anymore. It's marriage equality. And aren't we all for equality? By the way, Cuomo's speech was shocking in that he used every single key word associated with the progressive, deviant, antichrist movement that's been operating in this country for the better part of 150 years. Everything. Social justice, equality, all of it. It made me want to pick up a shotgun and shoot my television. That's how angry I was watching. And Andrew Cuomo, I hope you enjoy basking in the glory and the homosexual parties that you're attending over the next few days. I hope you really enjoy that, because you better enjoy it now, because it's going to be a long time in hell for you, Andrew Cuomo. Another Republican said, quote, he voted yes. His name was Mark Grisanti from Buffalo, for crying out loud, my hometown. Well, not my hometown, but I was born in Buffalo. This Buffalo Republican said, he prefaced his remarks, I apologize to those I offend, but I'm going to vote for the fags to sodomize each other right there in St. Andrews. Whatever. I apologize, though. You notice how they always apologize? Because they know deep down in their heart that what they're doing is wrong. But they're so selfish and hell-bent on a short-term political success that they're willing to throw aside anything moral, right, just, and good, anything good for the country, anything good for the state of New York, just so they can go out and party with the glittery queers. Or whatever. I don't know what's in it for them. It's unbelievable. All right. All right. We're almost to the end. I'm going to skip all the other stories about homosexuals, because I just can't take it anymore. And we're just going to mercifully end the broadcast. And I'm going to go here to Fox News in New York. Disturbing story. I told you earlier about the kids with the baggy pants and the no history, and they don't know anything. Meanwhile, in the Islamic world, they're actually strapping bombs to their kids for the other end of the spectrum. Well, from Fox in New York, several children were spotted running around a New Jersey street earlier this month, and they were naked and hungry, and their mother was nowhere in sight. So two teenage girls gathered the six children and brought them inside. They were hungry, one girl said. We asked them, did they eat? And they said they hadn't eaten in 2 days. So these two teenage girls fed and bathed the children and waited for their mom, who was out with a boyfriend for 2 days. I don't know. Just shocking the value we put on our children and the effort we put into our children here on what was the greatest experiment in human government in the history of the world. And now we've got moms out with their boyfriends, kids running around naked, mothers butchering and killing their children, killing their unborn children, stuffing their kids in the trunks of cars until their bodies decay. It's just disturbing, ladies and gentlemen. And finally, from Caseville, Michigan, from WWJ and the Associated Press, a 7-year-old Michigan boy who drove a car at high speeds for 20 miles has been charged with unlawful use of a vehicle. He was pulled over by the police. he had left his residence. And according to police, when they pulled over this 7-year-old and asked him why he was driving a car, he said he wanted to visit his father. Because his mom and dad are divorced. Anyway, folks, that's the broadcast. Keep your powder dry, folks, because we're going to need it. I want to thank you all for being with me. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and Personhood USA, and of course my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you, Lord willing, next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.